To wait till the monitor goes, I can see it go live, and then we'll get started. Ah, there we are. All right. Good morning. I'm Susan Drummond. I'm the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. Today, for the record, is Thursday, September 14th, 2017, approximately 9 a.m. We have just one item on the agenda today. That is a conditional use permit for a church. For those of you who have not been before me before on these types of permits, the way we usually proceed on these and the way we'll proceed today is we'll hear first from staff. They will present the proposal, and I've reviewed the staff report they've prepared, and they'll basically summarize what's in the staff report. Then the applicant will have the opportunity to follow up and provide additional detail on the proposal, and then we'll open the matter up for the public comment, and anyone who wishes to provide comment may do so. And there are already some comments in the record that are attached to the staff report, and I have taken a look at those. And then after that, both staff and the applicant will have the opportunity to address questions and concerns, or any questions that I have that may be raised during the hearing. I think the one other thing, just to make sure you speak when you come up, to speak into the microphone so we capture everything for purposes of the record. So with that, I think we'll turn this over to staff and let them present on the proposal. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your name for the record?
My name is Meg Sands, planner with the Department of Community Development.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do.
Great. Just on as I mentioned earlier, I've reviewed the staff report and I have the exhibits. I've got 1 through 32. I think 2 came in yesterday. And I'd ask for a larger copy of the site plan just so I could read that. And I've got that here. And then I had a question about the certificate of public notice, and it looks like that is here as part of Exhibit 32.
Sure.
So just to clarify on the exhibit.
Right, and I was going to introduce into the record Exhibits 1 through 32 and an additional exhibit, which is the PowerPoint slide. So
okay.
This would be an additional exhibit.
Okay, so I'll make the PowerPoint 33 and go ahead and admit all those.
And just to kind of briefly summarize for everyone that's here, the request is a conditional use permit to construct a church over 4 phases. And at full build-out, it would be a 2-story church with 38,000 square feet and providing an area of 400-seat worship center, offices for staff, and classrooms for children and adults. And there would also be a play field on the north end to provide for a soccer camp 1 week in the summer. That's something that they currently do at another location. And the project would end up with a total of 118 parking spaces. The subject property is just under 5 acres. It's a narrow lot. You'll see that in just a minute when I go through the presentation. I do want to point out there was a revised notice of application, Exhibit 18, and it referenced a variance. But that variance has been withdrawn by the applicant. It was not something that staff was able to support, and so they chose to withdraw that. But if there's any question in your mind with regard to that, because there's no really mention of it in the staff report, I just want to clarify that for your benefit.
That's what I guessed had happened, but thanks for the confirmation.
Absolutely. And then I want to point out that SEPA was done. That was through the concurrent notice of application process. That's Exhibit 18 in the record. That's a revised notice that we were talking about just a second ago. And staff reviewed the SEPA checklist that was submitted by the applicant. That's Exhibit 2. And a determination of non-significance was issued. That's Exhibit 28. And there were no appeals of SEPA, so that determination is final. So we'll just be hearing the conditional use permit today. And with that, I'd like to just kind of give you a visual representation of what's taking place. So if I can get the mouse to work, which usually I can't get it to quite show up on your screen, but sometimes it works, sometimes it's a little. There we go. It's just, you know, it's a Monday for the mouse. I don't know. So just to give you a general idea, Puget Sound out here to the east, this is Sinclair Inlet. The subject property is just north of Sedgwick Road. It's also State Route 160, so their access is off State Highway. And one of the major roadways is Jackson Avenue to the east and Bethel Road to the west. This gives you a kind of general wider view of the neighborhood, and just wanting to kind of give you an indication of the various subdivisions that are within the general vicinity. The property to the north is owned by Annapolis Water District, and you can see that they have a water tank here near the north end. And there's a church here to the west of that property. And just coming in a little bit closer view, just to give you a general idea, a little bit of what the site looks like. You can see that most of the southern two-thirds have been cleared, but the northern third is still forested. Here's an overlay with critical areas, and you'll see that there are no critical areas such as streams or wetlands on the subject property. However, when we take a look at the aquifers, the entire site is over a Category 1 aquifer. Now, churches don't have, they're not considered a threat to, a potential threat to groundwater, and any of the activities we would expect with a church would not have any impact or adverse impact. However, we have written a condition, Condition 25, that we prohibit any activities with potential threat to groundwater, just to make that very clear. So this is just kind of coming in a little bit closer to give you a view of the site. There was a home down here on the property, and it has been since removed. And this is just a different view, just to kind of give you a sense of what the vegetation looked like if you were to kind of go by that site. So it's just a different image. The one that our system has is kind of top down, so it kind of gives you a different perspective. This is the zoning. You can see that everything within the general vicinity is zoned urban low, same as the subject property. And these gray symbols within a lot boundary is buildings of one kind or another. Most of them are single-family residences, detached single-family residences. You can see to the east that there's a small pocket of neighborhood commercial on the corner of Jackson and Sedgwick. And then there's also some urban restricted residential property in the general vicinity. But for the most part, it's zoned urban low. So this outlines the phases. I covered each phase and kind of what's being proposed within each phase. The overall build out is over a 10-year time frame, more than 10 years. And just real maybe quickly with phase one here, they're going to build the approach and the circulation through the site, and they're going to have three modular buildings, one that would serve as the worship area, and then classroom and office with parking. And they'll have actually more parking than is required based on the number of expected seating capacity for that. But we don't particularly see an issue with that. And we're requiring, and you'll see in the conditions, that they will need to do the entire stormwater facility in as part of phase one. Other elements that we're requiring as part of phase one is landscaping of the west and east property lines, as well as the roadside frontage landscaping and rain gardens, as well as the required landscaping around the stormwater facility. So phase two, you get to see where they're starting with a portion of the permanent building. If I recall correctly, it's 16,000 square feet, two-story. The modulars will still be in place, and they'll be expanding the parking further. Phase three is just a continuation of adding on to that permanent facility, another 14,000 square feet, some additional parking. And you can see from this image where the solid waste facility is proposed to be located. It appears from dimensional requirements that may have to move slightly, or they may choose to relocate it on the property to meet requirements because of requiring a full single row of vegetation down this east property line. And then phase four is showing you kind of full build out. One of the things to point out is that at full build out, this will all be asphalt. But if you're looking here at phase three, and obviously one and two, that there are portions of the parking area and portions of the drive that are gravel. And then here's kind of the landscape plan, which gives you a little more detail with landscaping around the building at full build out. You don't see landscaping down this portion, And I think that there is a concern, which is why we're stipulating that there's got to be a full row of vegetation here. And there is a water line that runs along here. So one of the issues is making sure that there's an adequate separation between the water line and the landscaping, so that there's not an adverse element there. And there would be a fence. They're proposing a fence all the way around. One of the things that you'll see as a condition that we're requiring a 25-foot landscape retention of the landscaping here. That would provide for at least a 10-foot of slope because of concerns about the grading. I did speak with the engineer. He indicated yesterday that it was impossible to keep this vegetation in order to grade this site. We've had our resident engineer take a look at this and determine that it's not impossible, but that there would need to be a wall to hold that slope back. But this is achievable. One of the other things to also point out with regard to the play field, and we think that the size is fine based on this with that element, but that because it's a soccer camp, it's not like there's regular games, that this needs to be a certain dimensional size for regular regulation kind of ball field, soccer field, pitch, actually, depending on where you're from. One of the other elements that we discussed, the engineer and I, yesterday, was with regard to condition 50, and that was a question with regard to the fire hydrants and requiring two on site. And because there will be a fence that runs down here, there was an off-site hydrant in fairly close proximity, and you'll see that on the plans. If you look at sheet one, even you'll see that. But in talking with a deputy fire marshal, that because of the fence, there's not access, so that there would need to be two on here. And what actually occurs is at the time of site development activity permit, which is a condition of approval, that the site is evaluated to see where those hydrants are being located and they comply with code. So they would be required to comply with code with regard to hydrants. But it's known that at least two would need to be on there, which is why that condition has been stipulated. And condition 35 was the one with regards to the 25-foot buffer, just in case you wanted to look at that further. Or excuse me, it was not condition. Condition 25 was about the
screening buffer.
Right, that's a different condition. It is 35, not 25. 25 had to do with the groundwater element. One of the other reasons for requiring or outlining as a condition two rows of vegetation here is that code stipulates that there's a 35-foot side yard setback for church project. And the expectation is that a good portion of that area is for vegetation. Now, because they have such a narrow lot, obviously a long, narrow, skinny lot, that they have limitations to some extent with what they can do and with the proposed size of the building. It's still expected to meet some of that criteria that their building width will need to shrink just a little bit. Whether the overall square footage will need to change, that depends on the ultimate design, which hasn't been fully done, although here's an image of what the expected building is to look like. This certainly could change as they do their actual plans for the project. But just to run back here, so because of the proximity of the homes to the west, well, mouse shows up on my screen, I'm sorry, but just to let you know, on the right end of the property, from the way this image is the north side. Normally we have north pointing up, yeah. It doesn't work for this, so just to keep your orientation right. So when you're looking at the top of the site, that's actually the west side of the property. So because the houses are much closer here, oh, there it comes, that's part of the reason for requiring the two rows here. You know, if we had more dimensional area, we would be asking for two rows here, but we're trying to create a balance between that, and the homes are a little bit further. But by requiring additional vegetation as well as a fence, it helps to mitigate for that gravel and that noise off of gravel, as well as there's generally some dust, even though it's expected to be a durable, dustless surface, that there's some of that that occurs, so it helps to provide for some break there. And as well as that dimensional requirement helps for some noise mitigation. It doesn't fully do that, but as you move farther away, it helps to mitigate for noise as well. So that's part of the other reasons for that. And certainly within code, both footnote 12 and in 17.382, there are provisions for us to require something above that. And because it's a conditional use, we're looking at compatibility. This is considered a commercial project versus everything around it, for the most part, being residential. Just to point out with regard to the stormwater aspect, it is an infiltration pond, and that will be handling quantity and quality. And as I mentioned earlier, it's going to be required in phase one of full build-out. Solid waste will need to be required at phase one as well, so we can handle where that's going to be located through the site development activity permit, and don't see that there would be a problem there. We also have outlined as conditions binding sewer and water availability letter with a site development activity permit, or what we commonly refer to as the SDAP. And it's clear that fire flow is required for this project, and there are conditions with regard to that, as well as alarm system at different phases. As WASDOT, because it's off of State Highway, has reviewed this, you'll see that there's some emails within the record with regard to that. And they're requiring an access connection permit. They have not stipulated any other mitigation. We're not aware of any. But that would be something that potentially they may address further at the site development activity permit. Again, we're not necessarily expecting anything, but any mitigation that they would require, then that would be an obligation of the applicant. And as I mentioned earlier, the parking that's proposed, they have slightly above what's required at full build-out requirement is 100. But one of the things to point out with churches, even though it's stipulated as one space per four seats, in many cases from previous reviews, the occupant load is not always at that full capacity. So there is some recognition of that, and you'll see also a condition in there that they may, if they have full capacity of 400 seats and they're attracting that many their congregation, that there may need to be some adjustments. And so we've outlined that maybe some shuttle service or carpooling may be needed if they don't have enough capacity, or they may have to make some other arrangements, either splitting services. There's various things that they can do to accomplish that. So we don't see that there's an issue, that there's ways to address that issue, but we just want to point out that at different phases, they have kind of overcapacity for parking based on what the code called out, and at the very end that they are providing a little more parking than what's stipulated, but we don't have any specific numbers as to what their occupant load is for vehicles, so that's why that information was addressed in the staff report the way it was. This project has been reviewed by the various agencies. They're recommending approval with conditions, and as we have reviewed this project, we find that this proposal with conditions that are outlined in the staff report would be consistent with the comprehensive plan, would comply with Title 17, which is a zoning code, as well as other requirements of Kitsap County Code, such as stormwater, et cetera, and that it will fit in with the neighborhood subject to the conditions that have been imposed in the staff report and would not be materially detrimental to existing or future uses in that area. As a result of that, the Department of Community Development recommends that the conditional use permit request for the Living Hope Community Baptist Church be approved to the subject to the 60 conditions that were outlined in the staff report.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have any questions for me at this point?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Is the applicant here? Good morning.
Good morning.
Your name for the record?
My name is Fred Cagle. I'm an engineer for the project.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do.
Thank you.
Can I close this?
No problem.
Okay. My name is Fred Cagle, Cagle Engineering. I helped put the project together for the church and working with staff over time on it for a couple of years. Meg did an excellent job of presenting the project. I have no other presentation as far as that's concerned. If you have questions regarding phasing, et cetera, and church activities, Pastor Joe will be coming up and he can explain their method of operation.
Okay.
We do have some concerns over the staff report and some of the conditions. I want to refer to SEPA initially. We did receive a determination of non-significance. However, I see no record of the comments back from WSDOT. We received none, so I have no idea what they referred to.
That's Exhibit 16.
16 and 19.
Yeah, 16 and 19. You can get that.
Can we get it?
After, yeah, okay. From staff.
Just the point of reference, the record scanned exhibits were sent to Mr. Cagle yesterday.
Oh, okay. So I
did not get SEPA comments.
Well, we can take a recess if necessary to sort that. But.
And in that SEPA report there, or the comment on page 3, where SEPA said they received comments from WSDOT regarding traffic concerns and headlight impacts from vehicles for evening activities. Like I say, I'd like to see that documentation for that, because we do have some issue with the screening buffer in regards to the headlight impacts. The other thing I would like to have clarified is regarding Kitsap County Code 17-381, where it talks about setbacks. We do have a 35-foot setback, because we're in the proper zoning, from a building or activity. And I would concede that we have prepared a plan that shows the 35-foot setback to the activity, which is the play field, and the 35-foot to the building, which is the building. However, the rest of the site would not be subject to that 35-foot setback. That would be my interpretation of the code. We do concede that the director does have the ability to increase landscaping requirements. However, we do take issue with the requirement that that a double row of trees and a fence be placed along the west side. The way the code reads is it says single row of trees and fence for screening purposes, or a double row of trees without a fence. So we feel that the single row of trees and the fence is sufficient. Regarding the 25-foot screening buffer around the play field, which they were asking for to retain native vegetation, like I tried to explain to Meg, that the grading process for doing that make the play field the size and need that the church desires. It's impossible from the topography to retain all of the 25-foot native vegetation around the edge. Therefore, we did provide for replacing vegetation in our cut and fill slopes to help grow back. But I get a kick out of the other engineer indicating that the wall is wall could be placed there. However, that drives the cost of construction up considerably, and for the usage that the church is planning, it's not a cost benefit. One other issue that we need to clarify here is that, referring back to the WSDOT SEPA again, we were requested to put in a sidewalk in the right-of-way along Sedgwick Avenue. However, without seeing the comments from WSDOT, I don't see where that's a necessity. WSDOT has recently reconstructed Sedgwick Road, and there's adequate pedestrian way on both sides of the road, being a 6-foot minimum paved shoulder, and is presently being used by all residents and pedestrians in the area as a walkway. To add another walkway, which would only be about 85 to 100 feet, is basically a sidewalk to nowhere and is an unnecessary expense to the church. It provides no pedestrian value. Based upon that same comment, in here it alludes to the fact that all the conditions should comply with the plans as submitted. Therefore, we would like that modified too, to where we can remove that sidewalk and not be subject to the further review and approval of a modified plan. The other question would be, how do we define modified, which is on page 15, item number 11, condition 11. And I understand the purpose of this. If there's major modifications that do have an impact, potential impact on the project and onto the community, it's appropriate to go ahead and have additional review. However, our experience in the past is that sometimes this statement gets misconstrued, and the most minor modification to the plan all of a sudden opens up a can of worms. So, what authority are they citing here that gives them that option? Basically, the plan that we submitted was a conceptual rendition, and that what we experienced in the past is that when we do final SDAP, final site design, we discover that there are modifications that need to be done to that original plan. So therefore, the extent of the modification, I guess, needs to be clarified. Major, minor. And along those same lines, one of the conditions is that we apply to the WSDOT for a permit, access permit, et cetera. If they have modifications that they require during that process, does that automatically throw the situation back into having it reviewed by the county staff again, which is a time-consuming operation? So I need that clarified. Part of the conditions, that 25-foot screening buffer, I don't find a code that requires that in this installation, that native vegetation be retained. The setback to the activity is 35 feet, but which would allow you to replace any vegetation removed along with the screening buffer and the fence. So we would like to have that particular condition stricken. again, then on item 36, where it talks about the two rows of trees, there again, the code says either or. It's at the director's discretion that they can request more, but we see no justification at this point that would require that. Item number 44. There was a question as to, because it is a phased project and just due to the way that the church functions both financially and also occupancy, the phasing period can be, you know, variable, stretched out. So they were concerned about the fact that there's a 3-year cutoff date on a potential application. Now, I understand that they're talking about a complete application, so an application could be submitted, determined complete, and then the 3 years wouldn't apply the way I read this. I just wonder if it's possible to strike the word complete because of the phasing situation. Just a point of information, too, on the health district's conditions, item number 59, that existing septic tank has been removed under a proper permit and signed off, so that condition does not need to be applicable anymore. And the abandoned well will be decommissioned by another permit. That's item number 60. Other than that, that's as much as I have at this point. Do you have any questions or?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Are you also with the applicant?
Yes, I am.
And
I,
your name?
Pastor Joe Parkinson.
And you're supposed to tell the truth today.
Yes, I do. It's great to be here today and to be to this step after several years of hard work. And I just want to say thank you to the staff and to our team as well for all that they've done. I just would like to make a couple comments in regard to the project. One is that Living Hope is a church that's committed to the community. And I think the value of the soccer field is that we run a soccer camp every year for the community at a low cost. And we're running about 140 kids or so, 100 to 140 kids. And so anything that could be done there to help maximize that area and lower the cost would be a huge benefit. And we obviously would translate that into what we're able to give back to the community. As far as the one item I wanted to speak to was, I guess there's two, but one was the additional requirement for the buffer on the west side of the property. And on page, as Mr. Kegel has brought out, that on page 8, there is a statement from SEPA about concerns with headlight impact. We did not receive that, nor did I see anything that spoke of headlight concerns for the project from community comment. And so I think that's important because that factors into the screening buffer. Along the process is that originally, as we discussed the screening buffer with the staff, the concern was headlight issues. As of yesterday, it was a concern with the size of the building, and then today it was a little bit of a different presentation on that. And I would just like to speak to that for a moment, is that requirement, both in the narrative and then surfacing in the conditions, for a requirement of a additional row of trees in addition to the fence. And I'm an engineer by training. I'm a pastor by calling. And so I think critically and logically, and I just don't see the benefit, that any benefit to be gained by adding a second row of trees. And I'd like to develop this for a minute, because condition 36 calls for an additional row of trees. Well, I'd like to talk first of all about the fact of the tree that is being specced out for the installation, to being planted as the buffer, which is a Leland cypress. And just to kind of address that, Leland cypress is an excellent buffer plant, and it actually is used in some applications as a hedge line. And so a single row of these particular trees is the equivalent of planting a hedge line along the buffer, as well as adding a solid wood fence. And I would suggest that if you were to pull a car next to a solid wood fence, even if you were right next to it, you'd have very little light penetration. And I'm going to develop that in a minute. But when you add the buffer of the Leland cypress that's being specced out here, it basically makes it an impervious structure for light, as well as a great noise reduction as well from any impact on the adjacent properties. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, and I know at first this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but I want to talk about automobile headlight design, is that automobile headlights are designed to focus on a certain area to minimize light impact upon other vehicles. And the common way that lights are calibrated is they're calibrated for their alignment left to right so that they focus on the lane, and they're also calibrated for the height. Automobile headlights, if probably haven't really thought about this, but if you look at it, is that they're designed so that there's a beam, and then there's a certain point at which there's a black line, and below that, the light shines. So if you pull up to a car, for instance, and your headlights are on, you'll notice that your lights do not go above the trunk line, and then many times are just focused on the bumper itself. Headlights are designed to be calibrated at 25 feet, and the calibration point is for the focus of the beam to be 26, about 2 feet, 26 to 30 inches off of the ground. And the throw distance of a headlight, as you know, on low beams isn't much different than that. And the reason why, let me kind of tie this all together, is the reason why I'm sharing this is that if we had parking that was right on the buffer with the fence, I'm convinced as an engineer that there would be no light penetration. But we do not have any parking directly focused on the fence. In fact, if you'll notice, our traffic flow around the building through the design is a one-way process, that you come in, you go up the west side in, and that enables us to have passengers drop off at the building, and then you come out on the east side as you head down, and you can see that by the layout of the plan and on the plans. So there would be no direct headlight infiltration there. The other thing is that when you look at the parking spaces, the only parking spaces that would be directly pointed towards that property line are approximately about 75 to 100 feet away from the buffer. So we have no direct lighting. As well, there's a condition in the conditions on artificial lighting from the property at night, such as building lights and the light standards. And we know that nowadays with the technology and the engineering, all of that lighting is designed to be focused and can be controlled so that there's no light transmission to adjacent properties. That's already in there as a condition. As far as the building is meeting the setbacks of 35 feet from the property line. So I don't see how a second row of screening vegetation is somehow going to buffer the adjacent properties from the building by having a second hedge line in there. And so our desire as the church, our recommendation would be, because of the cost and the potential impact of the project, that we've already designed the plans five times in trying to work through all of these issues, and this is a later issue, is that the code be applied on that condition, and that there only be one row of trees and a fence, which I believe logically would be more than adequate, and there's no necessity for a second row of trees or second hedge line there. The second thing is that I would also like to speak to the fact is that we're not opposed to putting in the sidewalk for the sake of the sidewalk. But in this case, it's an unnecessary expense for the reasons that our engineer has outlined. And if somebody were to walk the site, you would realize that it would be a sidewalk to nowhere and just, from our perspective, a waste of money. And so we also would appreciate consideration on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the applicant today? Okay. So we'll open this up for public comment now. Is there a sign-in sheet? I just have two on here, so I'll run through these names, and then we'll open it up for anyone else who wishes to provide comment. First, Rita Olderman. Did I pronounce that correctly? Did you wish to testify? Did you wish to provide comment? I'm not going to answer questions, but if you have certainly after the hearing, if you have questions of staff, that's fine, or if there should be a recess. But if you have comment that you would like to provide, you certainly can do so.
Well,
can you step forward so we can capture?
I'm your neighbor.
Just hold. Well, let me make sure you're up on the microphone.
Okay.
And can you say your name for the record?
Rita Olderman.
Okay. And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes.
Okay. Great. And are we picking up with a microphone? Is that? Okay. Great.
I'm their neighbor on the back. And on the west, I have 2.5 acres, 2 houses, and private wells, private septics, and I have no objection to a church, but I have questions about probably what they plant, that the certain roots get into septic tank lines, and the septic tank is on that side. My well is very close to their one of them. So that's kind of, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I imagine we'll probably take a short recess so you can ask your questions of either the applicant or staff. So you have that opportunity.
Probably the engineer.
Yeah, that would probably be the best source for that for
okay, thank
clarifying,
you.
Right? Thank you. Let's see, Stephanie Andrews. Good morning.
Good morning.
And your name for the record?
Stephanie Andrews.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do. I am here representing the city of Port Orchard to relay some comments from our development director.
Okay.
We've prepared a letter, which we were not able to deliver during the written comment period because the city has not been notified of this project.
Okay. So just I'm going to make this Exhibit 34.
So as in the opening comments by staff, some of the maps that were shown illustrated that this project is within the city of Port Orchard Urban Growth Area. And through the SEPA process and public notification, the city did not receive any notice of this project in our urban growth area. So we've had limited time to review the documents, but we've done our best to put a letter together to summarize some of our questions and concerns. I guess first and foremost, a concern would be that we did not receive the notification and have not had adequate time to review this and ensure that the project is properly conditioned and not to prevent any harm to the public. We also would like to ensure that projects that impact our transportation facilities resulting from growth in the urban growth area are mitigated. Looking at the conditional use permit application, it appears that it may be incomplete since a completed capacity reservation certificate for transportation has not been issued. It has only been, the application has been submitted. It does not appear that the Public Works Department for the county has actually issued that certificate. And so that may hinder the county's ability to impose traffic mitigation after permit approval and the SEPA issuance. The proposed project includes impacts to the City of Port Orchard transportation facilities, and pursuant to Kitsap County Code 20.04.120, the city requests mitigation for impacted facilities once those facilities are evaluated as part of a revised traffic impact analysis. Approval of this conditional use permit results in additional traffic being directed to already failing intersections, which is contrary to the conditional use permit approval criteria found in Kitsap County Code 17.550.030, including being inconsistent with the comprehensive plan, failing to comply with the applicable portions of that title of the Kitsap County Code, and because it is materially detrimental to existing or future uses. The traffic impact analysis looked at peak PM traffic for Sunday rather than for peak PM hour when these facilities are failing. Peak PM trips are low for churches at 4 trips. However, this is not reflected in the traffic impact analysis. The traffic impact analysis also does not reflect whether the church will be conducting any activities on the site outside of Sunday services. The traffic impact analysis also fails to address the proposed development of a sports field and if it is to be used by soccer leagues, which would be difficult to prohibit in the future once there's a field there. That use generates 17.7 peak PM trips per field. The traffic impact analysis also failed to identify pipeline projects which capacity reservation certificates have been issued by the City of Port Orchard. This information is available to traffic engineers conducting traffic studies, but that information was not requested for this traffic impact analysis. So, lacking that information, the city feels that the hearing examiner may be lacking the necessary details which should have been provided in the traffic impact analysis supplied by the applicant. Another point that was made is that condition 44 states that the conditional use permit is valid for 3 years unless a future development permit is accepted as complete. And in that case, it appears that there is no expiration for the conditional use permit. The county's concurrency standards state that a transportation capacity reservation certificate is valid for 5 years. Kitsap County Code Section 20.04.030 requires that a capacity reservation certificate be submitted with the first development application. So if the capacity reservation certificate were to expire prior to completion of all improvements covered under the CUP, then a new capacity reservation certificate would be required. However, the applicant for the CRC would be unable to comply with the requirement of 20.04.030 because the conditional use permit would have already been issued, as that was the first development application. If the developer seeks to phase the project beyond a 5-year development timeline, a development agreement should be required. And in the absence of a development agreement, Condition 44 should be amended to stipulate that all development as permitted under the CUP should be completed within 3 years. We also have not seen the comments from the Washington State Department of Transportation, but it would appear that the proposed driveway configuration would create an uncontrolled intersection that residents of the 5 houses immediately to the east must cross traffic entering the church's driveway. So we would like to be involved in any discussions with Washington State Department of Transportation in the future on this, because it is likely that this area would be annexed into the city as it's in our urban growth area. And the other comment that we had was speaking to the variance, which we heard this morning is no longer on the table. So the letter that we've provided goes into more detail with some of our comments and concerns. But thank you for hearing our testimony today.
Thank you. Okay, so those were the only people on the sign-up list. Is there anyone else here who wished to provide comment? Okay. Let the record reflect that no one here had raised their hand. I think what we'll do is take a very brief recess. Yes, I'm sorry.
Did you have... I'm just not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll take about a, 5-10 minute recess, and then we'll reconvene. And then there'll be an opportunity for both staff and the applicant to, if they wish to do so, to address some of the comments, questions that have come up. Thank you.